Okay, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Kelsey Walter. I'm with the National Association of States United for Aging and Disabilities, NASHUID, and I'm the project director for our National Core Indicators Aging and Disabilities Project. I also have with me today Julie Vershatsky. She's the project director for NCIAD at Human Services Research Institute, HSRI. So if you have joined us already, so we have everybody actually on mute right now, and then at the end we'll open up the phone line so that people can ask questions. If you've just joined us and you haven't already done so, if you can press *6, that will mute your line so that when you come off of mute, when we're ready to ask questions, we won't hear you talking unless you choose to ask a question and unmute. And I can hear you all muting, so thank you very much. I also want to let you all know that we are recording the presentation today, and it will be posted on our website in a couple of days when that's ready, and you'll be able to listen to the presentation and look through the slides at that point. So a little bit about the project, just to give a quick background and recap. This is a joint project between NASHUID, HSRI, and NASDES, which is our sister organization that serves the developmental disability directors. And we've also had some help along the way from Muskie School of Public Service and University of Southern Maine. So in 2012, NASHUID's board actually began working really specifically on this project. We've been talking about it for several years and thought it would be really important to have something like the National Core Indicators on the DD side that focuses really on older adults and adults with physical disabilities. And in 2012, our board actually was able to vote and have us begin working on revamping the National Core Indicators Survey, NCI, to include these populations. And this really grew out of our concern about the limited information really available to the states to assess quality of life and outcomes for the populations that they're serving, who are receiving long-term services and supports through their state programs. So we really began with a revision of the in-person consumer survey and then also received some money from the Administration for Community Living to support some of the pilot work and survey revision and have received more funding in this last year to help with the final revisions of the survey and the rollout. So a little bit about the development process. In June of 2013, so just last year, we actually met with our steering committee to discuss each of the potential indicators. It was a day-long meeting. We talked through a very long list of indicators and then sent the states home with some homework to rank the indicators, telling us which were most important or which were not really important to them at all, and cut that list in half. Then in June through August of 2013, we had several drafts of the background and survey questions that were looked at. In September of 2013, our steering committee met again in person for about a half a day to discuss the draft survey and the revisions. And so all told, we actually had 7 revisions of this survey back and forth based on a lot of different feedback avenues. Including in November of 2013, a couple of focus groups that we held with older adults and individuals with disabilities that were receiving state services in Massachusetts. So we had a sit-down conversation with them about the surveys, and also some in-person testing that was done in December 2013 of the survey with the survey participants in Maine, with the help of Muskie School, helped us kind of conduct that. So then by December 31st of 2013, we had the final draft based on all of that feedback and all of these revisions. We had the final draft of the NCIAD Consumer Survey. So today we're going to talk really about the pilot results. So we had 3 pilot states that volunteered to pilot this survey for us, Minnesota, Georgia, and Ohio. Their samples could include Medicaid state plan and waiver services. This is aging and the non-IDD populations, Older Americans Act services, and some state-funded services. And as we're rolling this survey out, we're actually hoping that many of the states will choose to also include their skilled nursing facilities and nursing home groups as well. So we asked each state to collect at least 400 interviews. So October 2013 through January 2014, we had several technical assistance calls with each of these states individually, talking about building their sample, talking about stakeholder engagement. For those of you on the phone who are starting to work with this us on the rollout in your states, you'll definitely understand the kinds of conversations that we're talking about, but really trying to cover everything that it takes to kind of prepare states for actually using the survey. And then in January of 2014, we had our first round of interviewer training in Georgia. Then in February, we went out and did trainings in Minnesota. In April, we did the trainings in Ohio. And so we actually, NASHWID and HSRI staff actually traveled out to these states and did in-person interviewer trainings. And then we gave the states until the end of September, actually, to complete their pilots and send the data back to HSRI for cleaning and interpretation. But as of the beginning of August of 2014, all those states had submitted data, which is why we are here today ready to share some of the pilot results with you. So with that, I will go ahead and hand it off to Julie Bershatsky to talk about some of the results that we have to share.
Great. Thanks, Kelsey. I do want to say that the results that we're going to show today, those are just some selected results. We are going to issue a report with all of the pilot data results within the next few months, no later than end of December. So keep in mind, these are just some of the findings. There will be a lot more. And with that, onward. We did present some of these data already at the HCBS conference for those of you who were there, but the webinar today really brings in more data and starts looking at some of the interesting interpretations and interesting results within the three pilot states. For the purposes of the webinar and also for the purposes of the report that we'll be issuing, we're not going to identify which of the three states is which, because this is a pilot, and the goal of this was not really to compare the three pilot states. The goal of this was to pilot the survey and see how we can make it better, and then revise it afterwards. So we're just going to call the three pilot states in this, state one, state two, and state three. You're welcome to make guesses on which one is which, but we're still not going to tell you. So just in terms of how the samples, who the three pilot states consisted of and who went into the sample, state one, about half of the sample was in the Older American Act program. The other half was a little bit less than half was in the waiver, which included both older adults and adults with physical disabilities. Approximately 20% of those in the waiver were under the age of 60. Approximately 35% of those in the waiver had a physical disability. And approximately 9% of those in the waiver had a physical disability and were under the age of 60. There was a little bit of a problem with missing data, so about 7% of the sample we can't determine at this point which program, which funding stream they were in. State two, about a third were in the physical disability waiver, about half were in the older adults waiver, and about 20% were in the Older American Act program. State three, 68% were in the older adults waiver, 23% were in physical disability waiver, and 10% were in the Older American Act program. So there's quite a bit of difference, but it, as you can see, there's also quite a bit of coverage across all of the types of waivers and programs, except for the skilled nursing facilities that, as Kelsey said, were excluded for the pilot. Next slide, please. So with that, we're just going to show you some of the data. And again, keep in mind, these are just selected findings. For those of you who have not seen the pilot draft survey, we can send it to you after the webinar. And if you have questions in terms of how exactly these questions were stated and or asked, you can also ask us at the end of the presentation, because hopefully I'll go through these fairly fast and we'll have time at the end. So we asked people, what are the most common services they were receiving, and this is a direct question that does not come from records, and the most common services in all three states were PCA, which is personal care assistance, homemaker services, transportation, and meal assistance. But also, as you can see, there's quite a bit of variation between the three states. We also asked about how people first learned about the services that they're receiving now. And the results here are quite interesting. Majority of people said that they received the information, or that they first learned about their services they're now getting from friends and family, particularly state one. Almost half of the sample said that they learned about the services from family. In state two, quite a high percentage said that they learned about the services from a case manager. Also in state one, 12% learned about the services from their AAAs. In state three, I just want to point out, interestingly, that 12% learned about the long-term care services from their doctor. And we do, in the survey, make it a point to specifically ask people and then remind them that we're not talking about their medical services. We're talking about the long-term care services, so services they're receiving at home to help with their everyday lives. Next slide, please. We also ask, did you get enough information about the services you're receiving now? And a vast majority of people said yes. There's state one and state three are very similar in that regard. State two is even higher, 87% versus 81 and 82. Only about 5% in all three states said no. Next slide. We also ask, did you help plan the services that you are now receiving? Results are interesting. Again, quite a bit of variation between the states. State one said that in state one, 67% of people said that they helped plan all of their services, and another 16% said that they helped plan at least some of their services. State two, 48% said that they helped plan all of their services, and 19% said that they helped plan some. And state three, 53% said that they helped plan all of their services, and 16% said that they helped plan some of them. So state one, only 12% said that they did not plan any of their services, as opposed to 30% and 25% in state two and state three. Now, this next table is brand new. This is, we have not shown these data before at all. This is us trying to start looking within the state by funding stream, by program. And for the purposes of this webinar, we're only going to be looking at two states, state two and state three. Keep in mind that when we start looking within the state, within individual states, so start looking at their programs, some of these, it gets into relatively low numbers. When the numbers are less than 30 people, we don't show the data at all here. But just keep in mind that these numbers, the smaller a sample that you get, the less stable the results are. But at this point, we're looking for patterns. We're looking for some suggestive results. And there are suggestive, and they're definitely with patterns, and they're very interesting. For the states that are going to be enrolling and working with us in year one of the rollout, I know there's a lot of interest to start looking within the state at different programs. So this really just will serve you as an idea of what sort of interesting differences and interesting patterns you can expect to see. And we'll work with you to help you design a sample depending on who you want to look at. To really address your questions. So the second table on the slide is collapsing, did person help plan all of their services and some services? So basically it says this is a percentage of people group health plan at least some of their services by program within the state. So you can see that in both state 2 and state 3, there's a higher percentage of people who help plan at least some of their services in the physical disability waivers than there are within both the aging waiver and the Older American Act. And that's a pattern that, as I said, holds in both states, and actually the numbers are very similar. Next slide, please. Okay, we also asked the question of whether the services that you now receive, do those services meet all of your needs? And only 3-2% in all three states said no. Between 80% and 90% said yes, all needs, and 6% in state 1, 12% in state 2, and 16% in state 3 said that the services meet some needs, or some services meet the needs. Again, looking within the state, breaking out by program, it's interesting because in state 2, you can see, and this is looking at the response of all service needs are being met. So not some, this is just the yes response that's in the top table. So all service needs are being met. In state 2, you can see that the percentages are similar across the three programs, the Older American Act, the Physical Disability Waiver, and the Aging Waiver. In state 3, however, the percentage of people who said that all needs are being met by the services is quite a bit lower in the physical disability waiver than it is in the aging waiver or in the Older American Act program. We ask a follow-up question if people said that all needs are not being met. We ask the follow-up question of what type of additional services do they need? And the most common ones identified were personal care assistance, transportation, homemaker services, nutritional assistance, health, mental, dental care, housing assistant, and other things that you can see on the slide. This is all basically in decreasing frequency. Next slide, please. For those people who said that not all of their needs are being met, we then asked the follow-up question of, has your case manager talked to you about services that might help meet that need? And we only ask that question if the person knows who their case manager is. This is an example of a question that will probably be revised for the final revision, because in state 1, for example, 20% of people said that they don't know. So we need to work on this question a little bit. Okay, let's see. I'm going to go to the next table. We asked the question of, are you in charge, do you feel in charge of your own services, like you're in charge of your own services? And about 80% in state 1 said yes, about 75% in state 3 said yes, and 67% in state 2 said yes. 16% in state 2 said no, and 10% in state 1 and state 3 said no. Next slide. We asked two different questions about, do you know who to call if you have a question about the services that you're receiving, and do you know who to call with a complaint about the services that you're receiving? And the majority, a vast majority in all three states, said yes to both questions. The vast majority in all three states said that they can reach their case manager when they needed to as well. The percentage of people who said no, they can't, is higher in state 1 than in both states 2 and states 3. Next slide, please. We also ask a general satisfaction question. So are you satisfied with the services that you are receiving? The vast majority of people said that they're either very satisfied or somewhat satisfied. The proportion of people who are very satisfied is higher in state one than in state two and state three, 80% versus 70 and 65. When you start looking by program within the state two and state three, it is, again, interesting because it seems that the proportion of people who are very satisfied with services is, again, lower in the physical disability waiver than it is in the aging waiver or the Older American Act waiver. And that difference is bigger in state two than it is in state three. Also in state three, it seems that the highest, by considerable amount, the highest satisfaction is within the aging waiver. Next slide, please. We ask people if they need help with basic self-care and everyday activities at least once a week, who their primary support person is. And a higher percentage said that their primary support person is a paid director worker in state one. That was 76%, as opposed to 57% in state two and 54% in state three. And on the proportion of people who said that their primary support person was an unpaid relative was lower in state one, second was state two, and third was state three. These, I should also say that these percentages don't necessarily add up to 100 across because there are categories that were left out that were low, and we're also not including refusals and don't knows, but those are very low as well. They asked the question of, do you get enough help with basic self-care needs? And basic self-care needs are basically ADLs. And interestingly, all three states had 80% of people who said yes always, but state one had a slightly higher percentage of people who said no, so 13% versus 5% in both states two and state three. Next slide, please. Another question is, do you get enough help with everyday activities? So this is, as opposed to the previous table, this is not ADLs, this is IADLs. So things like going shopping, that's what usually goes into the IDL scales. Again, a very high percentage and similar across all three states said yes, always, approximately between 80 and 85%. And the percentages across the other categories, level and sometimes, are very similar as well. When you look within the program in state two and state three, it seems that in state two, the always get enough help with everyday activities are similar between the three types of programs. So between 80 and 85% of Older American Act participants, physical disability waiver participants, and aging waiver participants said that they always get enough help with everyday activities. But in state three, interestingly, 72% of people in the Older American Act said that they always get enough help. 76% of people in the physical disability waiver said they always get enough help. And a higher percentage, 86% in the aging waiver, said that they always get enough help. Next slide, please. We also asked respondents whether their support workers, and this only relates to if a person had a paid support person who worked with them. And this could be either a primary support worker or anybody else, because in addition to asking about the primary support worker, we're also asked whether there's anybody else that helps you. So for those people who identify that there is somebody who is paid, whether relative or not relative, we then ask a series of questions about their paid workers. And the first, this one is, do your paid workers change too often? We didn't try to define this for people. This is whatever is too often for them. The data indicate that in state one, a higher percentage of people said that no, my paid support workers do not change too often. So 82% said, no, they don't change too often. 9% said that yes, they do change too often. This is opposed to state two and state three, where between 64-67% said no, don't change too often, and 20% and 17% said that yes, they do change too often. We also asked whether your paid support workers come and leave when they're supposed to, and between 80% and 90% in all three states said yes, always. Only a small number, a very small number in all three states said that no, they don't, almost never or never. Next slide. Another question that we ask is, do your paid support workers do things the way that you want them done? And looks like state one has a higher percentage of people that said that yes, they always do things the way that I want them done. So 88% versus 76% and 77% for states two and three. Does the person feel safe around their paid support worker? Well, very few people said that, no, they never feel safe or almost never feel safe. It looks like state three has a slightly lower percentage of people who said that they always feel safe around their paid support workers. So 89% versus 96% and 98% in state one and state two. The ones that don't say, yes, they always feel safe, they say they usually feel safe. Next slide. We asked the people whether they like to live, whether they like where they live and whether they would prefer to live somewhere else. And state one has a lower percentage of people who said that they would prefer to live somewhere else. 10% versus 25% and 31% in state two and state three. The most common barriers identified by the participant for preventing them from living somewhere else are finances, too much trouble to move, health, physical, mental condition, accessibility, and fear of change or not knowing that there are other options. Next slide, please. We also asked whether people have currently home modifications and whether they need either more home modifications or an upgrade from the one that they have. And the most common home modifications that people identified that were needed in all three states were grab bars, bathroom modifications, specialized beds, and ramps. Similar question is asked about assistive devices, and the most common assistive devices identified were glasses, hearing aids, scooters, and wheelchairs. We ask about whether people are afraid of falling and whether somebody has worked with the person to reduce the risk of falling. And the reduction in the risk of falling is asked of everybody, regardless of whether they're afraid of falling now or not. So between 20 and 40% in the three states said that they are afraid of falling, and between 53% said that somebody has worked with them to reduce that risk of falling. Next slide, please. We asked people whether they have participated in some type of social activity in the last 30 days, and this can be a social activity that takes place either inside of their home or outside of their home. And it seems that there's quite a difference. 84% in state one said that, yes, they participated in some social activity in the last 30 days. 72% in state two said that, and 59% in state Day three said that they participated in some social activity in the last 30 days. The barriers identified, or not necessarily the barriers, but the reasons identified for not participating, most common in them were didn't want to, health or physical limitations, transportation, and accessibility, and actually cost was a fairly large factor as well. When we start looking within the state by the program, again, results are interesting because in state two, the percentages of people who said they participated in some social activity are fairly similar, quite similar actually, across the three programs. So between 70% and 75% in Older American Act, in the PD waiver, and the aging waiver. In state three, somewhat fewer people said that they participated in social activity in the aging waiver than they did in the Older American Act and the physical disability waiver. Next slide, please. We also ask whether you get to do things outside of your home when and if you want to, and this is specifically outside of home. So the previous question was either in or out, and this one is specifically outside of home. And state two is the one with the highest percentage of people who said, yes, I can do things outside of home, when I want to. State three is the lowest. Similar percentage said sometimes and no. We, again, ask what the barriers are, what the reasons are, and the most common ones are health and physical limitations, transportation, accessibility, and cost. Next slide. This is probably not surprising. Most people said that they do not work, so 99% in both state one and state three, and 92% in state two. However, many people did say that they would like a job. And when we start looking at the percentages of people who would like a job by program, we see that the highest percentage is of the participants who are in the physical disability waiver, 26% in state two and 29% in state three, followed by participants in the aging waiver, 12% in state one, or I'm sorry, state two and 9% in state three, followed by participants in the Older American Act program. Next slide. We also ask whether you like how you typically spend your time during the day, and a higher percentage in state one said that they always like how they spend their time during the day, 77%. State two and state three are slightly lower. State three, 60% said, yes, I always like how I spend my time during the day. And an additional 30% said that I sometimes or some days like how I spend my time during the day. Now, if we look, this is now going to reverse a little bit. If we look at people who never like how they typically spend time during the day by program, then we see that the highest proportion is of the people who are in the physical disability waiver in both states, and the proportions are similar. Next slide, please. Most people did say that they can see their friends and family whenever they want to, that is provided there's family involvement and that there are friends. This next question, however, is an interesting one. We asked people, how often are you lonely? The slightly lower percent proportion of people in state one said that they're often lonely, 9%, than in both state two and state three, which were at 14%. If you add up sometimes and often together, you get it between about 35% and 40% of the whole sample, actually 45% of the whole sample. When we start looking by program and only looking at people who said that they're often lonely, then we'll see that in both states, again, the highest proportion of people who said that they're lonely is are the people within the physical disability waiver, followed by the aging waiver and followed by the Older American Act participant, who are both in both states, is a fairly low number. Next slide, please. Related to the loneliness question is the how often are you sad and depressed and or depressed question. And 6% in state one say it often, and 14 and 16% in state two and three said often. And again, and another 23% in state one said sometimes, and 32% in state two and three said sometimes. Again, if we start looking by program and looking only at people who said that they were sad and or depressed often, it is the participants of the physical disability waivers in both states that come in at that say that they're often lonely the most, followed by, I'm sorry, that are often sad and depressed the most, following by those in the aging waivers and followed by those in the Older American Act program. Next slide. We asked about people's health. Few people rate themselves as being in excellent health, 3% and 6%. Another between 11% and 15% say very good. Majority of people say that they're either in good or fair health. And those numbers are fairly similar across the three states. We asked whether people, if they either had an emergency room visit or a hospital stay, overnight stay in the last 6 months, if they did, whether they felt ready to go home after being discharged. And the percentages in all three states are fairly similar, where between 79 and 84% of people who had an ER visit or hospital stay said that they were ready to go home, that they were prepared to go home after their stay. Next slide. We asked people whether they have a primary care doctor, and if they do, whether they can get an appointment to see their primary doctor when they need to. Seems that slightly higher percent of people said yes, they either always or usually can in state one than in states two and three. And in fact, 95% of people in state one said that they can always get an appointment to see their primary care doctor when they need to. We also ask people whether, if they have chronic conditions, and we don't ask people to identify what those conditions are, but if they have chronic conditions, should they get enough info and support to manage those chronic conditions? And between 86 and 95% said yes. All three states, again, state one seems to come in a little bit higher, with 95% of people saying that, yes, they do get enough info and support to manage chronic conditions. Next slide. We also ask about whether people ever have to split or skip a pill, specifically because of price. And interestingly, only about 1% in all three states said that, yes, they often or always have to split or skip a pill because of price. Of course, these are people who are receiving long-term care services, so let's just keep that in mind. Another 4 and 6% said that they sometimes have to split or skip the pill because of price, and 93-92% in the three states said that they never do. Next slide. We also asked about whether people feel as independent. I'm trying to remember the exact question again. Do you feel that you are as independent as you can be? So it's trying to get people to think realistically about how independent they could be given their conditions, given their health, given their limitations, Do they feel as independent as they could be? And the numbers are fairly very similar across the three states, with between 80 and 84% saying that yes, they are as independent as they can be. We also ask a question of do you feel in control of your life? And it seems that state one is maybe slightly higher percentage of people who said, yes, I feel in control of my life, with 83% as opposed to 74 and 73. We also ask people to rank four things in order of importance to them, those four things being health, being independent, feeling in control, and safety. And it's a forced rank, so basically it's one at a time. So we ask, out of these four things, what is the most important one? Identify just the one thing. People say what it is. Then, okay, now there are three things left. What is the second most important thing? Okay, people say what that is. And then, all right, now there are two things left. What is, out of these two things, what is the most important thing? So that's how rank is assigned. And in order of importance, interestingly, in all three states, it's health, being independent, feeling in control, and safety is the last one. Next slide. Okay, that brings us to the conclusion of some of the selected findings that we wanted to show you today. As I said, we will be issuing a report with all of the results by the end of December. We will not be identifying which state is which, but all the data will be available so you can look at it. We will be analyzing, well, for us to issue the report, we'll be obviously analyzing the data some more. we will also be revising the draft survey that was used in the pilot based on the analysis of the data, based on the interviewer comments who were great, by the way, in all three states, in keeping notes and giving us comments and making suggestions in terms of what was working and what isn't. So we'll be analyzing those comments. We'll be also talking to them, to the interviewers and to the vendors directly and getting their feedback. We also shadowed some surveys a few months ago when they were still being underway. And we will also be consulting, and have been, in fact, consulting experts in the field and our partners in terms of getting their additional feedback on the draft survey. So all of that will go into the actual revision. That will be done by mid-December as well, end of December at the latest. Then we will take that revised survey and we will do another, basically a mini pilot with a revised survey. State of Georgia has agreed to work with us, again, to help us with that. It'll probably be around 50 people, that we're hoping to interview with the revised survey again and do, some cognitive testing, do some inter-rater reliability studies as well. Will all be built into that. Next slide. That will take place in January, maybe early February of this coming winter, after which we will take the results of that small pilot and do a final revision of the survey, which will be ready by mid-March. We will also have a Spanish translation of the survey after the final revision. That will not be ready by mid-March, but it will be ready by hopefully by June of next year, so by the rollout, which Kelsey will talk about it in a second. And we are also going to be in the spring, after the final revision is done, the spring of this year, of next year, I should say, we will be working on building the Odessa system, which is the online data entry system administration. I'm not sure what the A is there for. Never remember that part. But it's basically going to be an online data entry system that will be standardized that will have all of the skip logic built into it, that will have all of the categories built into it, and that's very easy to implement, and all of the states will be using that for the data entry in the field. It will simplify the process quite a bit and standardize it as well. And that is, I think, all I wanted to say. Next slide. Yep, Kelsey, I believe this is you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Julie. And I know we're all very excited to ask some questions, I'm hoping, on the other end of the call about some of this pilot data. But I'm going to talk just quickly about the rollout, especially for those of you who are still interested in joining if you haven't already. So right now, we're in kind of ongoing introductory conversation phase with those states that are interested. If we haven't talked to you, if you haven't reached out to us, but you are interested, you are not behind. There's plenty of time still, so feel free to reach out to me, and we'll get a call, an intro call scheduled between your state and me and Julie. we're interested in including all payers as far as public systems are concerned, and all settings in each of the state samples. So we're really pushing states to include all of the settings in their sample if possible. So really in June of 2014, we started calls like this one, kind of some background calls and TA calls that were all state level, and have been doing that for a while. So if you've missed any of those, there is a on our website, you can go there, and the recordings of those and the PowerPoints are there, so you can review them. We're also happy, if you're setting up introductory calls, to review anything specific that you want to talk about. So we have started some state-specific TA calls, talking through what state samples will look like, talking about timelines and project planning and stakeholder engagement with those states who have officially committed to the project. Like I said, you're not behind. If you haven't started calls like that with us, there is still plenty of time. We have 8 new states that are definitely committed, and then our 3 pilot states are planning to continue on right now. We're accepting up to 15 new states for the project in year 1, and then we'll have also the 3 pilots, so up to 18 states total. And 8 new states is kind of a conservative number. Those are the states that have really paid and already started to dedicate staff. We have several other states who are very, very interested. So just a quick review of kind of how this will go. So Julie talked about finalizing the survey and all of what goes into that. On our end, we really do want to start those TA calls as soon as your state has committed to the process. We can do an introductory call, and then we'll want you to go back, talk in your state internally, and say, are we doing this? And if you are, letting us know, and then we'll start scheduling kind of some monthly, and then they'll be probably more intense for a while, maybe twice a month calls, to talk through your sample, to talk about stakeholder engagement, to talk about various topics and all of the pieces that go into planning actually implementing this survey on the ground in your state. The survey will be ready for use on June 1st of 2015, so that's as soon as you can possibly begin doing interviews in your state. That being said, for most of the states who are participating in this first year, except for those of you who know that you are, we'll be allowing states to collect data through May 31st of 2016. So if your state's not prepared to start collecting data on June 1st of 2015, you have some leeway in when you actually start collecting data. So you can move that even into the fall, as long as you know that you can get the data to HSRI by May 31st of 2016. So your state can kind of plan backwards and figure out what works best for you. We do have a set of states, 5 states, that are planning to do a very quick turnaround with their data collection so that we can still have some data in December of 2015. So they'll start on June 1st, 2015. They'll have their data back to HSRI by the end of September in 2015, and then we'll have some draft state-by-state reports that will be available in December of 2015, which will be kind of an exciting preview for all of you who are taking kind of the longer data collection time. For the rest of the states, like I said, you have till the end of May 2016. We anticipate that the draft state-by-state reports will be available by October of 2016, and then by December 2016, we'll have the kind of final NCIED full report from all the states, comparing all the states to each other as much as humanly possible. So that's just a little bit about the timeline there. And then if you have questions, also this is the link at the bottom of this last slide is the link to where you can find the recordings of the PowerPoints and the PowerPoints and some more information. Of course, if you have questions, you can email or call me and Julie. We're available all of the time. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and take everybody off mute. So if you did not already star six your phone to mute it, you will not be on mute any longer, so maybe pause conversation so that we won't necessarily hear what you're talking about.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Okay, so I'm going to open it up for questions. If you are on mute, so if you star six your phone but you want to ask a question, you have to star six to unmute. I'm sorry for the cumbersome problem. So are there questions?
Yes, I have a question on one of the survey questions. It said, would you prefer to live somewhere else? Is that referring to a state, a neighborhood, a town?
I can answer that. So we, in the trainings, and it's a really good question, because in the trainings, we specifically instruct the interviewers, the surveyors, not to, that we're not trying to get at, you know, I want to live in Florida. We're trying to get at the type of housing or the type of apartment or the type of residence that the person lives in and whether they're happy with it. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Hi, I have a question about, you mentioned that you're hoping that this survey is applicable to all payers in all settings. So with regard to nursing homes and even assisted living settings, would the case management piece, the person would still need to receive the case management, I'm assuming. And I just wondered if you could say a few words about the applicability of these questions for persons who are living in nursing homes and AL.
Yes, so we do have, we actually had in one of the states, some of these questions were used in nursing home settings because people had moved there or they were there in kind of a swing bed situation. So we know that these questions are definitely applicable and we know that they work there and that the data that comes back should be helpful. As far as case management, that's not a hard and fast rule. I think the point of the case management there is really that we want to know that, A, the person is receiving a fair amount of services so that these questions apply. And somebody is not on mute. I'm hearing crumpling papers, I think, in the background. So if you can check your lines, make sure you've muted. That would be helpful. but what we're really looking for, who people are receiving kind of intensive services from the state, programming. So I think people in nursing homes who are on Medicaid, would definitely apply to them. We're also, for a lot of the background questions, hoping that your state system has that data in the background. And so usually if you're involved in case management, that's more helpful. I don't know, Julie, if you want to add to that.
Kelsey, this is Camille. Would it be helpful to say that the requirement to have to be getting case management and one other service was a way to call the sample, but it's not an indicator for who could get this survey.
Yeah, this is Julie. I'm going to jump in for a second. That's actually exactly what I was going to add, is that the reason why that requirement for case management is there, it's not really a requirement that case management has to be there. It's more that the person has to be getting at least one other additional service to case management. So if somebody is getting only case management and nothing else, then we probably do not want to include them in the sample unless there is a very strong reason to. We are aware that certain programs don't really have a per se case manager necessarily, and that's fine. As long as people are receiving other services, they would still be included and the survey is still applicable to them.
Are there other questions?
I have a question about the question regarding in charge of their services. How is that described or explained to the person who is participating in the survey, what it meant by being in charge of your services or your plan of care.
I am actually looking up that question right now for you. So the actual question is, and remember, this is the pilot version, so we will be revising this. And if you have suggestions on how to phrase a question better, they're always welcome. But the way that this was defined in the survey for now is, are you in charge of the services and supports you receive? For example, can you determine what kind of services you get and when you get them?
Other questions or reactions even to some of this data?
This is Todd Coffey in Colorado. One question I had, the one about does your case manager explain everything to you? I forget how it's worded, but I know with the Older Americans Act, at least in Colorado, case managers might not be an individual that they're aware of, because a lot of services are provided directly through the provider, whether it's like a congregate meal program, they would just go to that. There wouldn't be a case manager involved. So I'm wondering if that's a term that they're aware of.
And, again, great question, because we don't – so the question that you're referring to is, has your case manager talked to you about services that might help with your needs? That question is only asked if people said that not all of their needs are being met, but also if two, the person prior to that said that they know who their case manager is. So because exactly from your point, not everybody necessarily has what is, you know, usually considered a case manager, and even if there is one on paper, they don't necessarily, they may not know who that person is. So we first ask whether, do you know who your case manager is, and if you do, how does your case manager talk to you about this?
Okay, thanks.
Do you have any states that are going to use this survey for people receiving services under a TBI waiver?
We definitely have some states thinking about it. That's something that we've a lot of times that programming can end up falling under the IDD population, so being covered by the National Core Indicators, the NCI survey. But I think that they can also end up sometimes in our survey. I don't know, Julie, if you want to add to that a little bit.
Yeah, Kelsey, I don't think there's any. At least maybe I'm forgetting, but as far as I'm aware, there's not a state that has talked to us about using the survey specifically for the TBI waiver, because usually that is under the IDD purview. But there are definitely states, and we already know this from even the pilot data, that have some people with TBI in their either physical disabilities waivers, or if they have basically a functional eligibility waiver that may not even identify how and why people end up on the waiver. So some people with TBI may end up in those waivers as well.
Thank you. And I have a follow-up question. How similar are the domains within the NCIAD survey and the NCIDD survey?
So when we started developing the AD survey, we actually started by reviewing all of the domains and indicators in the DD survey. And the intent was always, I shouldn't say in the DD survey, in the NCI survey on the DD side. The intent was always to have as much overlap as possible, and quite a bit of it, actually, majority of indicators are either the same or very similar across the two surveys. The questions that address those indicators may differ in the, just in the phrasing, the way that they're asked to make them more, directly pertinent, and make them more make sense to the population. But the majority of indicators are either the same or similar, and a number of questions are exactly the same as well.
And then finally, one last question: is there any plans to do any data analysis between the NCIAD survey results and the NCIDD results?
Yes, indeed. We're actually we're not sure whether we're going to be able to do this in year one, but a part of the reason why we want to start data collection of the on a regular ongoing basis in June is because it's basically going to run parallel to the NCI data cycle with a 1 month difference. So the idea is at and hopefully sooner rather than later, maybe in year one, but definitely by year two, to start developing some sort of joint reports between the two programs for the states that participate in both.
And also, for those of you who have been on the National Core Indicators website for the NCI survey on the DD side, ideally also eventually building a chart builder that can interact between the two. These are things that are in the future plans, but that's also something that we're interested in doing if possible.
This is Megan Hellenthal from Alaska. I was just wondering, is it possible to change, ask a fewer number of the questions or alter the questions at all? And then my second question is it possible to conduct the survey going forward not every year, but maybe every 3 years or every 5 years?
In terms of, and I can answer the first question, Kelsey, if you can answer the second if you want. In terms of altering the questions or making the survey shorter, definitely would not recommend and would actually be opposed to altering the questions because it will affect comparability between yourself and other states. And we really want this to be a validated and reliable tool that is used in the same way everywhere. However, we will be allowing and actually encouraging, if it helps your programming, to add questions to the survey. If there are specific questions that are not in there now that you would like to add, we'll work with you to review those questions. And in fact, we'll actually add them into the online data entry system for you. We'll build those in as long as they're not, too many. And in terms of how often you can participate, Kelsey, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so for the first year, for those who are interested in participating the first year, we definitely are asking that you participate both in the TA year, which is really just a planning year, not using the survey at that time, but it's all of the planning and the calls that go and training that goes into getting ready to use the survey, and then the first year, which is just using the survey for the first year. After that, states are able to come and go as they please with the project. I think on the NCI side with the IDD groups that most states are using the survey all the time. There are a few states that will do every other year. Also on the NCI, I'm going to say DD side, they have other surveys like family caregivers and surveys and some other things, staffing surveys that they use. So they will maybe alternate between the two. That's something that long-term on NCIAD side may be possible as well. Right now, we just are doing the consumer survey. But it is a possibility if your state would like to do that. Though we are encouraging states to do at least every other year because it would be more helpful. But, of course, it is up to you ultimately. This is a state initiative.
Okay, thank you very much.
Are there other questions?
And if you think of any other questions, feel free to email Kelsey or myself.
Okay, well, it sounds like there are not. So thank you, everyone, for joining us for the call. The PowerPoint and a recording of this will be posted in the next couple of days on our website at the address that you can see on your screen now. And please do let us know if you have questions. Thank you.
Thank you.